Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game and...
Ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes.
How you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week, I have Tim Summerfield. This is a two-part series with Coach Tim. And we sit down and talk about the phases of play. And this goes back to training and the value of it. And you can go find this. Every football federation has something similar to this. And most of them are very similar. And I think ours has been lost through parents wanting their players to be certain types of players. So before I say too much, let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
My name's Tim Summerfield, an owner of UK Pro Soccer Academy, which is a technical development training academy in Utah. I'm also a director of coaching for AYSO United, and I also do consulting for several clubs here in the area, all to do with coach development, helping their coaches to become better so that the players have a better experience in their grassroots soccer.
Thank you. So you caught my attention with the comment on social media. And I think this is where parents need to be better educated. And I think you hit it right on the head. I think you gave the FA answer for the phases of play. So if you can walk through us through the phases of play and we can dive deeper into that.
Yeah, the phases of development. Phases of development. So a lot of people out here, they take sport like it is a completely different element to any other part of life. And what I'm talking about is learning for children, how children learn. And what you need to do is take it as they would do in education. So every school has a school year. And within that year, they have a curriculum that's based on what the professionals say that children should be learning in that year. And it's no different with sport. So the English FA, as part of their England DNA, have age phase guidelines. So there's a phase of development for each age that the child is. We start with the foundation phase, which is usually ages 5 to 11. Then we move to the youth development phase, which is years 12 to 16. And then we move to the professional development stage, which is years 16 plus. And in England, years 16 plus go into what we call adult football. It's not youth football anymore. It's adult football, and 16-year-olds can join teams with 40-year-old guys or women. The foundation phase is teaching the children how to train. It's called learn to train. And the youth development phase is teaching the children how to develop. So that's called learn to develop. And at the 16 plus, the professional development phase, it's learn to compete. So train to compete. And that's the real difference here. I've had some conversations, in fact, on Facebook this past week in some of these groups that we're in. And one person was saying how 11 v 11, you need to be winning. And this is the whole thing that people, they don't realize that we're actually just teaching children dependent on how old they are. And this is the problem we get as well, where people on YouTube are putting stuff out there. And a lot of the stuff you look on YouTube, it's not child specific sessions. It's all adult stuff from clubs that first teams in the Premier League are using. But the problem is that the child in the foundation phase, ages 5 to 11, do not need to learn what a professional player does in training. They don't need to do the same warm-ups. They don't need to do the same drills. And that's where the problem lies, is that we're giving children college work in the first grade. And when you start giving children work that's beyond their learning capability, you decrease the opportunities for them to learn and grow in the sport.
There was a quote recently, I can't remember what pro athlete or pro coach said it. I was trying to think of it and I don't have a screenshot of it. He talks about that kids are getting too much knowledge too soon to play the game. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about here, is that you're saying we're bringing down first team level quality sessions to 5 and 6 year olds, where they ultimately being trained by a fire hose, so to speak, of knowledge. And do you think this is an American problem, not understanding the game well enough? Or is this a culture problem that we've created because of we want to compete at the top level too soon?
So here's my theory on the American culture. You now have coaches in the US at grassroots level that played soccer. So all the younger coaches coming through, they played it. But what did their coaches do? Their coaches probably didn't play. They probably were basketball, football coaches. They played probably basketball, football. Now, soccer is a completely different game altogether to those two games. The way the body moves, the way we use the ball, the way we use our feet is completely different. And when you have basketball coaches coaching soccer, then you have a lot of misinformation. So the current coach, who is a soccer player, coaches the way that their basketball and football player coaches coached, because it's learned behavior. You coach. Unless you really take time out and study it and go off and do different courses and expand your information, your knowledge bank, you're going to coach the way that you were coached. The problem is, and the biggest saying in coaching is, if we continue to do the things that we've always done, we'll continue to get the results we've always got. That there, I feel, is the problem. And the fact, and this is, it all goes down to what we value. So in the US, we value sports, people that have played. I've seen applications for jobs here in the soccer world. The number first thing on there is must have played professionally or college or must have. And that to me is not right. If we are valuing somebody's coaching ability based on them as a player. And I always say Gary Neville won every club trophy you can in England. Every club trophy you can. And multiple times with Manchester United. He went to Valencia for 6 months and he never coached again because he's an awful coach. And that's the example I always use. And I think the thing in the US as well is a big competitive vibe that we need to be the best. We need to win no matter what we do, no matter what it is in the US. We need to win. We need to be the best. We need to dominate. We need to show people that we are the power. We are the thing. And it translates through to youth. And then you have parents who are living their sport through their kids because they can't do it anymore. And I think it's a mixture of ingredients that get the final result of where we are today. And it's a shame, really, because it doesn't need to be that way. And the only people that are losing out are the kids.
Now, you hit on a couple of big parts, and I feel like as a parent, there are a lot of parents living through their kids, or they have a false sensitivity of culture of the game. It might be the best way of describing it. We are very much, I'm not so much, but a lot of people are very here in Texas centric about high schools. I went to this high school. I still go to this high school's football games, American football games. And I really don't care to watch any other high school play, where a lot of European countries are, your kid goes to Academy A or they go to Academy B and your family becomes, or you played in that academy and you become fans of those teams, even if you change throughout your life. So the best example I was given is in Europe, about every community has their own team. Wrexham is a great example of this going on. I talked about it in another interview, and they talked about how everyone there is a Wrexham fan. It is, we don't have that here. Families aren't loyal to clubs and clubs aren't loyal to families. So there's this like splinter of culture. There's no true pride within the clubs. So parents just focus on the winning. And if you don't have that community of the game, I feel like the development gets lost. If you don't have that culture of we eat, live, and breathe this club because this is where our kid plays and we're going to be a supporter of them after they leave this club, it doesn't happen. The kid graduates from high school and that club no longer becomes valued to the parents. It may be valued to the player, but that pride in that community goes away. And I feel like if you are a soccer developed country, that's the best way of describing the United States. We're not a soccer developed country. As much soccer as we play here, we have thousands of games that go on in our Metroplex every weekend. We aren't, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh no. We don't have loyalty to the game. It's just in the moment. They aren't diehard fans. And with parents, like you said, they're living through their kids. They're living their dreams. And then it's about the winning. It doesn't matter at all cost. And social media doesn't help that. If you go on social media, how many posts do you see about my kid? They won this tournament this weekend on any of those social media groups. Like, I'm so proud of them. But they don't post when they lose. They don't post when they're defeated. They only post when it's success. And do you think, I've gotten a long way off tangent here, but trying to get to this kid's question, do you think they actually are educated enough in the game to understand like development is the journey and not the sprint? Or is it the lack of understanding of soccer takes years to develop? It's not like other sports.
I don't think it's any of that. I think it's bandwagon. everybody's on the bandwagon. You see what Jimmy's mom and dad are doing, and you copy them because that's what you think should be done on the sideline at your game. Now Jimmy's mom and dad are moving Jimmy to a higher club because they win more. So if they're doing, that's what we must put our value in. So we need to move Johnny to that club. Now they're going a different direction because they want to go even higher, a different league now. So I'm going to do that. So it's kind of a little bit like lemmings, is one follows the other. We follow. And I don't think there's actually real thought into it about tribalism of the game, about an understanding of the game. I don't think it's about that at all. I think it's the fact that we live in that society where in England we say keeping up with the Joneses. They're getting a new car. We need electric now. They're getting a bigger house. We need a bigger house. And so that's what happens. And so the problem with the education is, I don't think it's necessarily about a knowledge of or understanding of development of the game. It is partly that, but it's more about when I talk about what we value, what to value. Now, a nutritionist will tell you what foods to value. And if you care about your health, you'll probably listen to that nutritionist. Same with your doctor. If you're going through physio or something like that, they will tell you what to value for your health to get better. And you'll listen to them because you trust them. The problem we have is that we're in a world with sport is that people don't look at it like that. They don't look at it like, so my child's mental health is on the line here, but they get loads of wins on the team. But the coach screams at the kids, but they win. You have to suck it up because we're winning, you know? I've been out here and seen stuff on the sideline that is not even borderline abuse. It's actual abuse. And I say to the parents, why did you put up with this? Oh, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. Oh, it is. So what I'm trying to do is educate parents into what to value in a coach, what to value in a team, what to value in a club. And then we can get into the details of development, especially with these phases.
Yeah, let's start off there then. So if you do have, I don't know how to describe it. You talk about, I know there's coaches that scream the whole entire game. We've been around this game long enough where they coach through fear and not compassion, might be the better way of describing it. And I think there's a lot of coaches out there that coach through the process of an iron fist, and you're going to do it my way, and my way is the only right way. I don't care if you have a way that works for you. You're going to do it the way I want it done.
Yeah. And why did they do that? Because their old football coach and basketball coach, who was probably also in the army, teaches that way.
Yes. And that's the thing. It's thinking through this process. So before you can even start your foundation of the whole process, the phases of development, how would you describe the phase of your coach that you're doing a start with then? Because I feel the coach that you start with at a younger age is not the same style of coaching you're doing in need at the older ages, just because the demand's different. The expectations are different because the phases are different that you talked about. So we'll start off with the coach. So at a U11 and younger age, what type of coach should parents be looking for then? For their players.
That's a thing I struggle with as well, because a real good coach is like any profession. It takes years to mature and to learn how to do it. So for me, for example, I can come and do a session with your two-year-olds, which will be the way I deliver the session, and the tools that I give them are different to when I'm doing varsity high school, which I also do here. So a coach should be able to differentiate between the groups so you can deliver what they need. And I think it's more of the coach has a responsibility to educate themselves on what is needed. Now, any good coach should possess the same attributes. So what makes a good coach? They are understanding. They are great communicators. They guide players to reach their own outcomes and decisions. So they're not just telling you, do this, do that. It's more of question-based coaching. How can we do this? How can we get that? How can we work this? Why is that happening? And that stays the same through every foundation, the attributes and of a coach. But it's more of understanding what to deliver for that age. So let's take it, for instance, let's do in possession for the foundation phase. Players, all players need to stay on the ball and master the ball in every phase. And for the foundation phase, they just need to develop a mastery of the ball and the confidence to try new things. And the youth development phase, they need to look to receive the ball in all areas of the pitch and be prepared to stay in possession. And the professional development phase, they need to retain possession with intent, both individually and as a team. So you can see there on every phase, we're trying to have the same outcome, but the actual tool they need to learn for that phase is completely different. From develop a mastery of the ball and confidence to try new things, all the way to retain possession with intent, both individually and as a team. That's the vary from the foundation to the professional development phase. So the coaches really need to understand, what does the child need to learn for what age they are, what phase they are?
I think that takes a unique individual. I think they always say that the saying that I hear a lot here is the best coaches need to be coaching the academy level. And recently I just heard the opposite of that. It's the best coach for that age, not always the best coach in the club. And I got thinking about that a lot, thinking about this conversation, because a coach that does really well at teaching 5 and 6 year olds, why do you want, even though he may be a phenomenal coach, if that's his area of specialty, why remove him and to go have him go coach an older age group? And I think the issue here in the United States is if you're coaching those younger age groups, the pay's not the same. You only make more money at the higher level teams. You get more praise, more recognition here in the United States, at least, for truly developing players at the higher ages than the younger ages, because those are the ones that go on a national showcase. They aren't the ones that are, they aren't asking who was your developing coach at 5 and 6 years old to teach you all this stuff. It is the only ones that get recognition are, I think that's part of our issue with our soccer community here, because we don't have the big clubs that support the academies like they do around the rest of the world.
Yeah, that's a problem worldwide. But the only difference is that in the UK, for example, if your player is decent at 6 and 7, so has potential, you'll get picked up by a professional club and get that professional training that a high paid coach is getting paid to coach 6 and 7 year olds in that, for that development phase. And they actually are called, they'll be called a foundation phase coach or youth or a YDP coach, youth development phase coach. So yeah, but for grassroots level outside of the professional game, it's the same thing. Is you have your dad's coaching the young kids, and as you move up and up as a coach, then to, if you want to get the money back for the education you've spent on, then you need to get a job with the older teams, unless you're in a professional environment.
I think that's a hard one, because as parents are looking at their coaches, my advice, anytime you look at a coach, go watch on how they coach a game. That's the only way you'll see who they are outside of practice, because you can go sneak up and sit in your car and watch a training session and see how they run training sessions. But in a game, especially tournaments.
But we can do that if we know what we're looking at. If we can't see HD quality, a standard 1980s TV will look the same as a 4K 2024 TV. And if parents are told, go and look at the coach, go and see how they coach, and don't know what to value in a coach on game day, they will have no idea of what is good and what is bad. And they come away, I don't know. And I have questions from parents all the time about what should I value in this? What should I value in that? It's because it's not topics that we should have parent education, just like they'd have grassroots courses here. We should have parent education courses. And in fact, the clubs that I consult with, I run parent education nights where I can help the parents to understand what to value. I've had a recent thing with a club that I consult for where some parents weren't happy in some aspects of the team and they wanted to make changes with the coach. Some of the things that the parents were saying were correct. Yeah, I agree. But some other things, especially game day coaching, that they weren't happy with that I didn't agree. And one of the things that they said was, on game day, the coaches are quiet and they're just sat on the sidelines. They're not giving any instruction. They're not helping the kids on the field. And I said to them, I think I'm one of the best coaches in this state. And I do. You'd hate me. Why? Because I sit and I take notes. In training in the week, we work on for our two sessions, we work on one topic. So whether it is playing out from the back or transition or whatever, or passing or whatever we're doing. And in the game, they're given 2 to 3 objectives based on what we've trained on that week. I let them go out and play the game and at halftime come in and I'll say, what we seeing, what we hearing, what we thinking. And let them talk about the objectives. And I let them play the second half. And then they come at the end and I say, what we seeing, what we feeling, what we thinking, and let them. But a game is not, so people say to me, like, who's coaching the game this week? I always say, no one. We don't coach games. We coach in training. But parents out here feel that the loud, aggressive, excited and animated coach on the sideline is a good coach. Actually, that's detrimental to the game because the player is having no time to think for themselves. The game is an opportunity for the third training session of the week. And it's more like the exam. Now, a teacher in school will give a curriculum, will help guide the children to the outcomes that they need. And when the exams come, you don't see the teacher behind them. Oh, no, you got to put the dot there and the comma there. And you don't see that. Why? Because they need the child to go through that process so they can assess their learning and understanding. And that's exactly what the game is. It's the exam at the end of the week.
Now, I love my technology. I love having, when the team has a game recorded, I love sitting down with my 10-year-old and watching the game with him. Do you think teams need to do that more, or do you think players need to take the initiative at any age to rewatch their games and take notes of things they did well and things they can improve on and things that they saw the team? Or is that more of a...
I think when you get to professional development, which is trained to compete, then yes, that's when you would use video technology to sit down with your player and help them to understand the game and understand their role in the game, things they could do better, things that were if they did better. So things they're doing good now, and if they did that even better, they'd become an even better player. But they don't need that in the foundation phase and development phases because they're still learning. At U12, it's trained to learn, right. Trained to learn how to train, and the development phase is trained to develop. So that's the issue that we've got. Plus, is the parent or the coach educated in video analysis?
That's the hard thing.
Because I've been and watched some of my development players in my technical training academy. And don't forget, we just do technical work in there. It's nothing to do with being on a team. But sometimes you go and watch our players to see how they are technically in a game, to give them advice. And afterwards, I've asked, why do you do this? Why do you do that? Why do you do this? Because the coach has told me to. And it's completely the wrong thing that they're doing. I don't get into it. I'm just curious, why are you doing that? The coach has told me. Why are you standing on the halfway line when we're attacking in the box? I'm a defender. No, you're only a defender when we are out of possession, which is the same as anybody on the team. You are currently in possession. You're an attacker because that's what your team is doing. Even the goalkeeper, you're an attacker. So how can you be best placed now to benefit the team? You don't only defend, and that's the issue that we've got.
That comes back to philosophy and culture. I think it is, I guess the best way of, that goes through the phases of play, not even phases of development, phases of play. And I think you learn about it in your coaching license. In the grassroots, you do. I know you do because I took my grassroots. You learn about the four phases of play. It's possession, I can't even think of it. I have it written down somewhere. But there's four phases of play. And you're either winning the ball back, attacking, losing the ball, and then defending. And those are the four phases. And I think teaching players roles and responsibility on possession of ball is key, because you just nailed it. It's why are you standing on? That's where my coach tells me. Is it because the coach understands when you have the possession of the ball, everyone's attacking? When you watch pro teams, unless they're playing a low block, everyone's up. Even the goalie is out of the box 10, 15 yards out of the PK box sometimes, 10 yards I've seen in the attacking, so they can be there for a pass back to reset or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that we don't see here in our American culture of the game of football, because we are stuck in the old ways. It's like you said, it's how they were taught.
Yeah. And I've seen high school teams with a defensive coach and an offensive coach for soccer, and they train separately. This is all about education. And it's nothing that the licenses are teaching, but it's learned behavior. Where from? My coach, who was your coach, he was a great football guy, American football.
Right.
And the game as well in the US is more of from the back to the front as quick as you can.
Yes.
Which is basketball and American football. You need to get it from the back to front as quick as you can and score, and then get back and defend. And then score. But that is not our game. That's not the game. That's not the game of soccer. That's not how the game was built or what the game is about. And listen, you could go on for days and days talking about all the different intricacies of the game. Now, tactical wise, it's as easy as saying, when we've got the ball, we attack and we attack together as a team. When we don't have the ball, we defend, and we defend together as a team. Children, young players, they don't need more info than that. And that's another problem that we get, is coaches trying to be the Pep Guardiola. You're coming out with tactics. Your game chat before the game is about tactics, how we're going to win. But the game isn't about winning at this age. It's about developing. So your win should be, first, do my players understand the principles that I'm teaching during the week? And generally, you'll find they will understand it if you teach in the right way. Second, can they demonstrate it in a game-related scenario environment? That answer is usually no for a long time, because they just don't have the technical ability. Even though they've got the understanding, they don't have the technical ability to perform it. But what's more important, having the understanding or the ability? The understanding needs to come first. So that's a win. That's your win. Are you teaching players where they understand the principles of the game? In defense, delay, deny, restrict. Do they know that? Do they know what their jobs are? In attack, speed of play, creativity, and penetration. Do they know? Do they know about that, at least? They might not be able to perform it, but do they know? We don't need to be doing, we're doing it this week, we're doing a 3-5-1, whatever it is for the age, even lower. We're doing a 3-3-1 for our 8-9-a-side or whatever we're doing. Yeah, you're gonna whip in this, get bored out, but you're gonna, you know. Kids don't need that. They don't understand it. I have a mum with a player from my technical training academy this week. Do you teach positions? And bear in mind, this girl is like 8 years old and I'm brand new to the game. I was like, no, we just do technical work. We help get their passing better, help them to receive the ball better, which helps them to pass better. We do dribbling, ball control. We do finishing, and we do speed and agility to help the players just get used to that sort of thing. And we do all that. But we don't talk about, oh no. I said, what's wrong? Last week in her club game, the coach said, you play forward, and we don't know what that is. She doesn't know what it is, and we don't know what it is. You play forward. And that's the problem that we're getting, is that you're not teaching the kids the principles of the game. Some coaches are too advanced for the age, for the phase that they're in. In the UK, when do tactics come into play?
I would say probably the play to win, because that's the only time U16, because that's when tactics matters. It's, you have the foundation down. Everything exactly. Else, you understand how to move your body, move the ball.
Exactly. 16 plus. And I'll give you a stat. in the UK in the academies, and it's not like the academy here. I think academy in the US is more of like learner, right? Where academy in the UK is more of pre-professional. So it's the stage before pro. It's not the grassroots. So in the academies, U12, 85% of the games they play are non-competitive. Then you get to U16 and it gets to about 45% of games are non-competitive. And they increase every year. So at U14, I'm 65, U16, 45. And then, so this is, I'll go to Chelsea Football Club. At 16 to 21, they win every single tournament league competition going. How can they do that? Is if at 12, 11 years old, they're only getting 15% competitive play. And this, 40.
This goes back to Dennis Genis. He talks about they don't keep track of scores over there of a match. They keep track of the way they earn points if they're actually applying what they're learning in their training sessions. And if they did a 1-2 or if they did an overlap, that's how they get their points. It's not by how many balls go in the net. It is by, are they actually applying what they're learning in their weekly sessions in game-like environment?
And it's because the professionals have educated themselves in child pedagogy of how children learn and develop. And they don't learn through winning. They learn through objective-based training or teaching. In schools, they'll go into a class and on the chalkboard at the front, chalkboard, I'll show my age, the whiteboard at the front, it'll be today's LO, today's learning objective. They already know, oh, that's what we're going to be trying to learn today. And then they'll be taught. And that's exactly what our session should be.
So this goes
curriculum-based, objective-based coaching.
So this is something new that I have learned probably in the last 2 years. Great coaches will have a playbook. And it's a 5-year plan or a 2-year plan or however many years they have. Or it's a 12-month curriculum. Especially here in the United States, we have the select age of just U11 and up. Or teams that are U11 and up, I should rephrase that. And the clubs here, most coaches I feel, or clubs don't truly have a playbook. I know the MLS side does. They'll say, here's what you have to go teach your players for the year. And this is what we expect out of you as a coach. Because only reason I know this, because I've talked to enough academy coaches and select coaches saying, no, like this is how the rest of the world does it. This is how real football is taught. This is the U.S. This is the U.S. model, but this is how the rest of the world is doing it. And they say you follow this. Yes, you teach playing out of the back, but you also have to teach them when is the right moment not to, and when is the moment to be doing that. And I think someone says if you go back 50 years ago, it was a long ball game in the lower level in the UK. It is trying to get the ball up the field as quickly as possible. 50, 60 years ago, and into the net, because it was a completely different game than it is today. And it was more physical and it was more vicious. And you didn't have much time if you did have the ball. You're getting slide tackled into. And now he goes, there's time to actually play the game like it's supposed to be.
Plus the fields are better.
Yes.
That's the main difference as well. You can't play a technical game on a boggy field. So that's why they did it, because there was no... You didn't have that, the sort of technology and information that we have now of how to actually keep a field great. So, yeah.
And it was interesting listening to him talk about the progression of the game. And he's an advocate of, yes, it's okay to play out of the back. It's okay to play the long ball, but you have to read what's in front of you. And that doesn't come from doing the same thing over and over in practice. That comes from letting them learn in game-like scenarios. So, in your scrimmages, you set up an overload or you set up something so they have to learn to make a judgment call. And now, is that more, would you say, in the second phase of this education process or phases of development of for players is more of the game-like scenarios where phase one is more body movement, how to handle the ball, how to do that type of stuff? Or am I completely off on all these phases? And
no, that's right, because the youth development phase is about then... Now we're teaching them the principles of the game, whereas the foundation phase is having them get excited about the game, their enjoyment, being positive, being confident, reacting quickly, having a positive attitude when they're in possession, try and win the ball back quickly and prevent opponents. So it's all that. Whereas when you go to the youth development phase, now we're getting into outwitting the opponent, being prepared to defend we one-on-ones, reactive instinctively and intelligently when possession is regained, then seeking creative solutions to situations. So yeah, you're not far off. But in every phase, you're letting the game teach. Example, last week, high school coaching, varsity team. Coach, in this instance, you said do this. What if this happens then? And I'm like, it's situational. I can't give you the answer because there's always, what if this person? But then what if that person? Then what if this happened? Then what? And I said to them, why does Lionel Messi still train 4 or 5 times a week when everybody's saying he's the GOAT and has been for years? Why is he training? If you were a professional at your job, you don't really train anymore. You just do the job if you're at the top of your profession. But you can't in soccer because the variables are changing that often that you still have to learn and adapt and train and grow. So for the foundation phase, we still have to let the game teach, same for the youth development and same for the professional development phase, which is why in the US it's called play, practice, play. In the UK, it's very similar. It's a warm-up, which is a game. You do a technical session, which is unopposed, a skill session, which is opposed, and you finish on a small-sided game at the end. And all of those sessions, where it's play, practice, play, or the English style, they have to be based on the objective. So your game at the start, is if you're doing passing, is based on passing. Your practice bit is based on passing. Your game at the end is focused on passing. And that's how the players learn. But we need the coaches to understand the principles of the game so that they're teaching the right thing. Otherwise, it is counterproductive.
Now, let's say that you go through those. I like the 4 phases better that you talked about. It's the play, the skill, the tactic, and then the last play, whatever has been the building progression. I call it here, because we have play, practice, play. I call it play, practice, laziness on the coach side, because I feel like a lot of coaches will not stop that last scrimmage or that play side of it all, because they just want them to play the game and learn through the game. But if they aren't using the things they were just taught in that, the prior 2 sessions of that practice or the training session, whatever you want to call it, that training session, what's the point of that last play part if they aren't going to stop and actually coach? And I feel like a lot of coaches, when I have gone and watched training sessions of other teams, they scrimmage at the end and everything they were just taught, you never see it apply through the training session.
Yeah.
And I call it lazy coaching, because I'm doing the play, practice, play model, but are you really? Are you just allowing them go through the transitions?
So, and with that last, the final small-sided game, we could do a whole podcast on session, anything you want football-wise, I'm here. But so just real quickly, is the first 5 to 5 minutes you let them play on uncoached. And during that first 5 minutes, coaches should be evaluating the common thread of the topic that you're doing that's going wrong. So you'll see it. So you could have in your head already, I want to talk about this, but you can see actually during that first 5 minutes, this has happened 4 times. Or we've just kicked the ball, or we've just, whatever it is. And then the next 6 or so minutes, you do stop, stand still. Here they call it stop and freeze. Stop, stand still. So the players are stopping, they don't move. So you can actually show them the picture of what it looks like, so they can get a greater sense of what's going wrong. And then you help them correct that thing. But the last 20 minutes, they should play. Uncoached, unaided, boom. But as long as you've got your first 10, 15 minutes of stop, stand still, but there's got to be a point where you just let them play and stop the talk. Because while our high school classes, I don't know how to cover it here, but in England, they're 45 minutes class. And then they go to another class, a different one, 45 minutes, because they can't keep that focus. And now you've got 6 and 7-year-olds that are doing out here 90-minute sessions. In England, it's 60 minutes. You're doing 90-minute sessions with 6, 7, 8-year-olds who've been at school all day. They just want to play. But so at the end, you need to let them play and just let them. So there's nothing wrong in that. But as long as the first part of that is based on the learning and stop, stand still so they can understand.
Okay. I see where you're going with this. And then because I'm still in the phase one of the development here, and with my kid, he's only 10, but he plays on a U11 and he's played up for 2 years. And the more I have watched coaches, the more I have seen this, a lot of them will go straight into, they'll let them scrimmage for maybe 10 minutes in the beginning of training session. Just everyone's just coming in, just to get everyone there. And once everyone has arrived, they'll actually turn into the training session that was he's drawn out for the for the session. And I've seen this at all levels, not just my son's team. And they'll go through a series of, if it's passing, like they'll work on a certain type of passing drills and as a team, and a lot of it's zigzags and certain switches and things along that line. And it's entertaining to me because if they can't control the ball, they can't pass the ball well. I think the best quote I've heard so far, one bad pass will lead to a bad touch, which will lead to another bad touch, which will ultimately lead to the ball turning over to a goal. And I think it's a series. And I think we here are missing heavily in that first phase of just playing to touch the ball and moving how to move around. And I think too many parents are so caught up on they need to look like little robots out there passing the ball and not letting them truly learn how to pass the ball.
Yeah, but because they don't know what to value. It goes all back to that. They don't know it's not their fault. They just don't know what to value. Now, I think I'm 43 years old with really dodgy knees. I'm a class player. Now, 15, I wasn't. 14, 15, I wasn't. Why am I a class player now at 43 when I've had no training? I wasn't a part of any clubs where we got training. I was never part of that because I was passionate about the game and I played and I figured it out myself. The play practice play, and here with a club that I'm a director of coaching for, part of my consultancy for my academy, we actually use play practice progress play and the progress bit. So the practice bit is unopposed and the progress bit's opposed. So it's basically the English method. But what is it really? What should it be? You've just done your grassroots courses, or you've done your grassroots.
Right.
It's play. When you get there, you set up an organized game that simulates some part of the game. It's not 5v5 where it's just, you could have a 2v1 with winging, whatever you want to do. And then you move to your practice, which could be 2v2, 2v. It's still a game. You're playing a game. It's not get the cones out, dribble around the cones, pass back to your player, dribble around the cones. It's a game. You're playing. And then the small sided game at the end, you're playing. So really, it's play. It's just that in that second play, you are stopping more than you would for the warm-up game. And anybody that's done the grassroots coaching courses know that the US expect the play to start to be 30 minutes, the practice to be 30 minutes, and the small-sided game to be 30 minutes. It's not 10 minutes and then 50, and that's, you know.
The attention span of a six-year-old, 6 minutes.
Yes, 6 minutes. But if it's a game, they'll play forever.
Right.
You get your six-year-old on Fortnite, I bet you're struggling to pull them off after 4 hours.
Yes.
That's for sure. Because they're enjoying it. It's a game. And that's why all of our sessions should be game-related, should be a game. You're training. It's just a game. It's a mini game.
Hey, everyone. I hope you have enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. Tim is a great guest. I can't wait for you guys to hear part two next week to wrap this all up. And I think there's so much more here than we let to believe.
Hey, everyone. If you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.